Shalom, and welcome to Torah Tzimecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Chana Tannenbaum, and today we'll be studying Parshat Lech Lecha. Our Parsha begins with the command to Avram to leave his familiar place and go to the place that God will show him. Once arriving there, a famine plagues the land, and Avram and his entourage move to Egypt, where Sarah is stolen by Paro. In chapter 13, Lot and Avram separate, with Lot choosing Sodom. In chapter 14, we read of a war. In chapter 15, God makes the covenant of the parts with Avraham. In 16, Avraham marries Hagar and Ishmael is born. And in chapter 17, we read of Avraham's circumcision and his name change and Sarah's name change and the promise of Yitzchak's birth. My grandmother always used to say that you have to have mazel or good fortune for everything. I think that even the stories we tell and those we hear need a little luck to get our attention. Some of the weekly Torah readings are so full of big drama that minor stories get little or no notice. This week, Parshat Lech Lecha is so packed with interesting and gripping stories to the extent that the war with the four kings and the five kings in chapter 14 gets short shrift. In addition to containing what sometimes seems like a laundry list of names and places, the very mention of God's name and Avram's name do not appear until midway through the story. The reader is left to wonder, what is the purpose of this chapter? And who is fighting and over what? So we are told of four kings and five kings, where the five kings, who are not really kings, they're more like mayors or chieftains, are subservient, meaning they pay taxes to four Mesopotamian kings who live far away. For 13 years, they paid the taxes, and in the 13th year, they rebel. So either they don't pay the taxes, or they kill the tax collectors, they bar the caravans. And in the 14th year, the four kings come to quell the rebellion. And what we have here is almost a world war. We know that the first time the word milchama, or any word, appears in the Torah, it has a special significance, and it gives an understanding for every other place that word appears. Rav Hershia points out that this is a war of kings that has no benefit for the common person or the countries involved at war. Now, the five kings are known in the Pasuk by unusual names, which gives us a little bit of background as to who or what they are. Bera stands for he was Ra, he was evil to heaven and to people. Bersha, he was elevated in his wickedness, from the word Resha. Shin Av, he was hated to his father, Sone Av in heaven. Shem Aver, is he made wings to fly against God and rebel against him, and Bela, which is the name of the city. These five apparently very bad men fall into the hands of the four kings who are known as Amraphel, Arioch, Kedorlaomer, and Tidel. Now, the first experience that Avram had when he came to the land of Israel was the famine. Because there is no water source, and when there's no rain, there's going to be drought. The next event that he experiences is the war, which is also based on the location of the land of Canaan. It is surrounded on three sides by three different continents, so there's always going to be the reality of foreign armies wanting to pass through it. And despite that the land was promised to Avraham, it neither had mere material abundance nor political stability, but in spite of that, Avram and we flourish in this land. The Midrash in Bereishit Rabbah 42:1 uses the verse in Tehillim 37:14 to explain the entire incident of the war. The whole motivation of the warriors in capturing Lot was just to kill Avram. Cherev patchu v'sha'im, Vidarko kashtam, lahapil ani ve'evyon, litvoach yishrei dorach. The wicked have drawn out their sword, they have bent their bow, to cast down the poor and needy, to slay such as are upright in the way. The wicked have drawn out the sword, the cherev patchu rishaim vidarko kashtam, and have bent the bow. That alludes to Amraphel and his companions. Lapil aniv evyon, to cast down the poor and needy, that's Lot. And to slay the upright, litvorach yishrei derach, that refers to Avraham. And the pasuk continues in Tehillim, their sword shall enter into their own heart, as it's written, and he fought against them by night, he and his servants, and smote them, etc. The Zohar in 1:6 continues in this line of thought and explains that the whole chapter is a world war whose sole purpose is to rid the world of Avraham and his ideology. The Torah is establishing that all world events, no matter how far removed, are somehow related to Jews. The king who leads the coalition in the verse is called Amraphel, whom the sages chiefly identify as Nimrod, Avram's arch enemy in the Midrash, the one who throws him into the Kivshan Ha'esh, the burning furnace. Nimrod's very name suggests Mered, rebellion, and the Midrash understands that the man knew God and rebelled against him anyway. This is an ideological war. Avraham, in chapter 14, verse 13, is described as Avram Ha'ivri, Avram the Hebrew, or indeed the one on the other side. This is part of the reason that the Zohar sees this war as ideological. It specifically targets Avram the upright, the one who is different from the others, to rid the world of him and his teachings about God. And they took Lot and his possessions, the son of Avraham, and they departed, and he was living in Sodom. Verse 14. This verse is full of repetition. If you've been paying attention to the biblical text thus far, you already know that Lot is Avram's nephew, and you know where he was living. Why bother stating as much again here? The Netziv, Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, explains that the reputation of this verse, in proximity to the War of the Kings, indicates that Lot was captured specifically and only because he was Avram's nephew. The soldiers are presented as having left the battlefield to search Lot out specifically in the city of Sodom. As it says, Lot was in the city because he was not on the battlefield. The soldiers made a point of entering the city in order to seize Lot. They assume, according to the Midrash, that Avraham would come to save his relative, as compared to Cain who kills his, and in this way they would be able to eliminate Avraham and his philosophy from the world. The Midrash in Bereishit Rabbah 44 quotes Rabbi Nechemiah. Avraham says, "I will go to battle alone and give my life for the sanctification of God's name. Why is going out to save Lot a sanctification of God's name? Only if this battle is larger than Lot and is one that is publicly dedicated to removing God and his representatives from the world. And Avram is then obligated to defend God's presence in this world. And behold, Avram is successful." The two personalities that he meet after his victory, the king of Sodom and Malki Tzedek, both respect him and recognize his God. So this chapter is not just plain fact of who is fighting whom and why, but it is also an inspirational chapter of redemption, personal and national. The Ramban explains that this chapter is foreshadowing an example of Ma'aseh Avot Siman Libanim. What happens to the fathers happens to the sons. Just as Avraham fights against four kings and wins against all odds, so too the people of Israel will suffer under the reign of four kingdoms and emerge victorious, even though they are outnumbered, just as Avraham was. This narrative, therefore, teaches that even against all odds, Jews will see victory over their enemies and eventually escape their servitude. Moreover, Avraham becomes the redeemer of the land that he captured from the kings, including the land of Israel, according to the Midrash. And the Italian commentator, Umberto Casuto points out that the king's journey, the four kings' journey, mirrors or preludes that of Israel's departure from Egypt and the entering of the land. In this chapter, we actually have a number of redemptions. We have Lot, who was personally saved. We have the land, which was redeemed from its captors. Rashi, on verse 17 in this chapter, points out that the kings got together and appoint Avraham king, meaning that the Kiddush Hashem that Avraham had intended was actually achieved. Avraham himself is saved, ultimately meaning that he will have children and future generations. And we have the association in this chapter of Pesach. On verse 15, the verse reads, Vaychalek aleihem laila. And Rashi says, laila. After nightfall, Avram did not refrain from pursuing them. The Midrash Agadah in Bereshit Rabbah 43:3 states that the night was divided. And its first half, the miracle was done for Avraham, and its second half was saved for the miracle of the midnight of Egypt. In other words, this story occurs on Pesach, and half the night a miracle was done for Avram personally, and the other half was a miracle was done for Avram's descendants when they left Egypt. And not only are the Jews being saved in this chapter, but when we save Lot, we're also saving Lot's descendants. From Lot came Ruth, who is the Moabite who follows Naomi into the land of Israel, who, of course, is the great-grandmother of David, king of Israel. David himself is the ancestor of Mashiach. Again, it is the Medrash here that makes the point explicit. In Bereshit Rabbah 42:7, Rabbi Eleazar ben Avina says, if you see kingdoms engaging each other in conflict, anticipate the appearance of the Mashiach. Know that this is true, for in the days of Avraham, redemption came to Avraham through the kingdoms engaging each other in war. And just as Avraham was able to be victorious over world empires when it appeared that he has no chance with his minute army of 318 men, so too one day Avraham's children will succeed beyond the world's wildest imagination, even when grossly outnumbered. Avraham, after the war, comes to the city of Shalem, where maser is given, one-tenth is given, and bread and wine are exchanged between Avraham and Malki Tzedek. This all symbolizes the avodah, the service, which will be done in Yerushalayim, hopefully speedily in our days. Thank you for studying with us, Parshat Lech Lecha. And now for the thought question. Based on Avram's action, is one allowed to put oneself in harm's way, even in a life-threatening situation, in order to save someone else?